Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of questions, lots of pretty pictures. Nice picture of one of the rain lilies. I believe it's a Hybranthus that someone got from the botanical gardens. And just absolutely beautiful things blooming now. And, you know, the long drought accompanied by this bit of rain we had, I think a lot of people got the first significant rain in a while. Maybe we're going to get some more this week. Will really cause those rain lilies to just bloom. I mean, they respond to rain. They also respond to drought, which is interesting, too. So you often get the best bloom when there's been a dry spell followed by rain. Beautiful thing that's happening. Amy's got a great question. And I'm always telling folks that, you know, if you've got some bare spots in your yard and in your grass, in your lawn, that lawn thing that occupies so much of our mind, oh, heavens to Betsy. We have limited mind space, and it is unfortunate that lawns occupy so much of it, including mine. But here it is. So we got a hole in the lawn because the grass isn't growing, and the grass may not be growing there for a lot of reasons. We could fix that spot, but oftentimes it doesn't grow there because there's too much shade or some other things. In this case, we don't really know. I don't think Amy and I don't think we ever actually decided. I think I remember Amy's pictures, or maybe I don't. Maybe she didn't send me any. But the fact of the matter is she's got a space in her yard that the grass isn't growing well. And rather than saying, oh, what do I do to get grass growing here? Maybe a better question is, gosh, couldn't I do something more interesting? Couldn't I do something that would make me happier, that would be prettier, that I could use more? And so Amy's asking all these questions, and I can give her a long list of great things to do there, but she's got one that I think is just perfectly fine, which is to say, I'd love to have flowers. I'd love to have flowers there. And can you grow flowers there? Yes. So, Amy, one of the things we need to figure out is, because you want to, and she wants to start with annual flowers just to make sure she likes it. One of the things we need to do is figure out which flowers are going to do really well here, because we're coming into the really hot part of summer. If we had started back in spring, I'll tell you, because there's a series of flowers, we have such a long growing season and so many different climates within the year. If we had started earlier, if we had started back in March, you could have sown cosmos and zinnias, and they all would have done really well, and they would have been really beautiful right now. But I think cosmos can be a little bit hard coming into midsummer. If I were going to do a if I were going to do cosmos, and you could look for cosmos varieties. You know what I'm talking about with cosmos? You know what they look
I've
like?
I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar.
No, they're beautiful. You'll like them. At this point in the year, I would use Cosmos sulfureus, the yellow-orange cosmos. And if you can find some of those, and just sow them there, they'll do great. They'll do beautifully. And you'll enjoy that. Another great thing to try there this time of year is something called Mexican sunflower or Tithonia. This isn't the same as regular old sunflower. In fact, it's much prettier in a lot of ways. The petals are red, brilliant red, and really gorgeous. And they are tall. And one of the things you'll find about plants this time of year is they're not knee-high. Most of the plants that are going to do well for us, particularly the annuals this time of year, are going to be taller. But Tithonia is just gorgeous. And so you could 15 Tithonia plants make this big, huge, bushy kind of thing that is just beautiful, just full of flowers, and you will love them. You will fall in love with them. So if you can find Tithonia, T-I-T-H-O-N-I-A, and sow them now, I think you'll be very happy. And then, once you see how well those Tithonias do, then we can talk about, let's talk about some of the other things we can do, because coming into fall, in August, you can put marigolds in there. Marigolds will do great this August. So that's a lot of fun. You can add that to the mix. You can even add petunias to the mix this fall. You can add nasturtiums to the mix this fall. There's a whole lot of things you can add. But right now, start with that Tithonia. The Tithonia will actually help you to break that soil up. So it will improve the soil and provide nitrogen, which is going to make it a whole lot easier to grow other things.
Okay.
So that's a great place to start. Can you grow melons there? Yes, indeed, you could. But let me not suggest you start with melons, because the soil's probably not that great right now, and we can improve it. It'll be better by the time we're over with. Let's start with the Tithonia. It's late for melons as well, so I would have started melons earlier, or I would start them later. Start them in July, or start them back 1st of July, or start them in spring, but I would say hold off on the melons. Let's do these great, beautiful flowers. Let's do the Tithonia, and that makes it real simple, and you'll like
okay.
it.
Just ask you real quick. That was one of the questions I had about the soil. Because grass is not growing there, and the grass that's around it is not spreading into that area, should the soil be tested?
No. Here's what I think you should do. And this is probably the issue. You know what I mean by a garden fork?
Yes.
Four-tine garden fork. Wiggle it into the ground. It's probably going to be a little bit tough there. It's got a hard pan is the problem, almost certainly. And wiggle that fork into the ground. Pull back on the fork just like it's a lever, just like you're pulling back on a throttle. Just pull it back. Crack that soil, move to the next spot, crack it again, don't turn it upside down. You'll crack that hard pan, and it'll grow just about anything. It will help if you can add a mulch. When you get that Tithonia to start growing, add a mulch to it, and that will keep the hard pan from reforming. And one of the things you may find, as disappointing as it is, and it will be disappointing from my perspective, is that once you do this, and once the Tithonia gets in there and improves the soil, the grass is probably going to grow back there quite readily. So it's a shame that that will happen, but that's probably the case. But since you want to grow wildflowers, you're going to make the grass even better. And maybe you'll love the wildflowers so much you say, God, I don't want any of this grass. And you'll keep the grass out of there permanently.
Okay, great. I had another yard that had wildflowers in it. It was very pretty. Now, I just wanted to clarify, I add the mulch after I plant?
Right. In this case, yes, I'm going to suggest you do that because you want those seeds to come up in bare mineral soil, but they will quickly need that organic matter on top. So let the plants come up, let them get a little bit of height, and then put your mulch on there. Just put it around it. They'll do a lot better, and you should have a great crop of Tithonia.
Okay, great. I'll send you a picture.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Bill.
Good to talk to you. Charlie, who? We got another caller. Yeah, so it's Kurt, and Kurt wants grass planting tips, and that's going to take a while, and I got 50 seconds to break. So, Kurt, hold off on that just a little bit, and let's do that. Listen, somebody call me with a picture of something they call sticker grass, which is interesting. It's not what I would call sticker grass. I'm not sure why it's called sticker. They're calling it sticker grass, but this is actually what they sent me as a picture of a nut sedge. A sedge And how do I get rid of it? Well, there's lots of ways to get rid of it. The question is, what's going to happen when you do? And that's why I need you to call me. And let's talk about it. Give me a call.
Heaven keeps on raining, heaven's going to break. Heaven keeps on raining, heaven's going to break. And the water gonna come, and I have no place to stay.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things going on. I did get a picture of somebody sent me a fern and asked, did it come from a neighbor's basket? It was kind of invading their yard and spreading. No, it's an invasive fern, another one of those many invasives we introduced ourselves just to irritate ourselves. I don't know how we do this, but we did. And it's Diperia petersoni, if that matters to you. It's I guess I'm going to call it Japanese false spleenwort. It seems to be the common name, Japanese false spleenwort. We can call it hairy invasive fern. if you'll feel it's got a lot of fuzzy pubescence on it, like, you know, kind of like somebody hadn't shaved in a day or two, all along the leaf and along the rachis, along the stem that holds the leaves. Hairy Japanese spleenwort, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's an invasive fern, and it is annoying as fire. It just grows everywhere. But your neighbors didn't bring it to you. It was imported somehow into the U.S., and it is spreading broadly in South Alabama. Hasn't gotten into North Alabama yet, but it's we're seeing it a lot more in gardens. And it's a real nuisance. You know, I don't know what you do about it. You'll never get rid of it entirely. The spores are just prolific. They're everywhere. On the other hand, they can really get in the way of having an attractive garden sometimes. They don't look really good. They don't, over the long haul particularly, they kind of look a little ratty. But you can try. You can try to keep it, but there it is. That's what it is. If that helps you, and we can call and talk about it, and maybe all we can do is commiserate. But there it is. That's what you got. Kurt, are you there still?
I am. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Tell me what's up.
Sure. I started off with a grass question. I still have that, but is it too late to transplant roses?
It's not the best time, Kurt. Not the best time.
Okay.
I would. You could manage it. It's doable.
Okay.
It's certainly doable. I would wait until fall.
Okay.
And then that's the first thing I would do. The second thing I would do is I would make sure those roses were really valuable and couldn't be replaced easily, because transplanting an older rose is not an easy thing to do. Do you know what kind of roses they are?
I do not. They've been here since we bought the home in 2009,
yeah.
And probably for some time before that. I've always wondered, did you ever hear about the Rose House in Fairhope? We bought what they called the Rose House way back when, and I think these were probably some original roses. So they were
So they may be quite valuable. They may be quite valuable. So they're not just junk roses from Walmart. So for those roses, let's take care of them, because there may be some really interesting things there. So let's wait till this fall.
Okay.
And this fall it'll be a lot easier. And late fall is the best time. Can you wait that long?
Sure. Yeah, there's not a rush on it. So.
Yeah.
Okay. The main thing I had called about originally was we're needing to replace some grass, or to, you know, have some grass. We've got a lot of shade. We've got a couple of large crepe myrtles in the front yard I'm just trying to, you know, I've talked to several people, and kind of the consensus I hear is St. Augustine, but I didn't know if you agreed with that, and what to do to prep the soil. Is St. Augustine the best choice?
Somebody had even suggested
using seed as opposed to getting some sod, and I
ignore that. Ignore that.
No?
Don't tell them. No. Well, let's talk about this, okay? First off, there is no perfect grass. You will never be. Grass will never make you happy. You will never be happy with grass. And yet grass is useful. And the best way to be happy with grass is not to think about it too much, because it's always going to have problems. Just the whole concept of having a single plant covering such a large area is an invitation for disaster, inevitably. The easiest, and so I'm going to give you three choices here. The easiest way to grow grass is not to worry about grass in summer. Forget about grass in June, July, and August. Instead, worry about having grass the rest of the year: September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, and maybe early May. And then grow an annual winter grass that's just beautiful all winter long. It's really great, and you can grow it from seed. But as soon as I said that, I could tell a chill went up and down your spine, because nobody can deal with the idea of not having grass for the 3 months in summer. So we're going to have to grow to warm season grasses, and we have to think about them. All of the warm season grasses, all of them, have to be done from sod. Do not, under any circumstance, try seeds for any warm season grass. You will make a huge mistake.
Okay.
The one thing, and so you got to go with sod. The one thing I will say is that centipede, of the grasses that, on the scale of unhappiness, centipede is a 10. You cannot get a grass that will make you less happy than centipede.
Well, that's what was here and has been dying out over the years. So
it will, it will always make you unhappy, and there are many reasons for that. But if you can look at less unhappiness, then I would go to the level, the least unhappiness, the way to be least unhappy with your grass is to grow St. Augustine or maybe some of the new zoysias that whose cultivar names are always escape me at the time I'm supposed to remember them. But there's some new zoysia grasses that have wide blades, and both of those grasses do better. And it depends on the circumstances, but I would say the wide-bladed zoysias or St. Augustine are going to be your best choice. If you're getting a lot of traffic, if there's a lot of traffic in the area where you're going to grow these, I would go with the wide-bladed zoysias. They seem to do better with traffic. They seem to hold up better in traffic. St. Augustine is beautiful. It can be mowed high. So the wide-bladed zoysias can be mowed high. So those would be the two picks: wide-bladed zoysias that can be mowed high, or St. Augustine grass would be my two choices. There aren't a lot of other real choices. Do not, under any circumstance, go with Bermuda grass. I said centipede grass would make you the least happy. Actually, Bermuda grass would make you, on a scale of 10, a Bermuda grass is a 15 on the unhappiness scale. It's terrible. Do not get Bermuda grass. Do not get hybrid Bermuda. Go with the St. Augustine or one of the wide-bladed zoysias. Now, let me tell you a couple of other tips. One,
please.
The world isn't made of grass. Don't make your whole world about grass. Find other things to do with parts of your yard. Secondly, do not try this now. Wait until fall to plant. It is so much easier. It is so much easier to plant in fall. And crack your soil. You can talk to me about when you're ready to plant. We'll come back and we'll talk about it. You want to crack your soil before you do this. And that means don't use a tiller. Do not use a tiller. Crack it with a fork. And don't feel obliged to do the whole yard at once. Do pieces. Do one large chunk at a time. You know, separate your yard into, if you want to do your whole front yard, do one half this year and one half next year. Makes it a lot easier.
Okay. Thank you. In addition to breaking the soil, does it make sense to like bring in some compost or something and just lay out on top of the, and it's just
yes, absolutely.
Existing
absolutely.
Grass and so
absolutely.
Forth.
So here's my quick formula. I was trying not to put too much it out there, but here's it. Crack the soil first, add pine bark on top of that, about 3 inches deep.
Wow.
Compost is going to decompose incredibly quickly. It won't have any benefit. The pine bark, each piece should be no bigger than your fingernail, but the grass will grow right into it just like that. It's perfect. So look for slightly decomposed pine bark. Put it on about 3 inches deep. After you've cracked, don't till it in. Leave it on the top. Put a little lime on top of that. Water it in. Smooth it out. Put your lawn on top of it. Call me back in fall when you're ready to do this, and we'll go over it again.
Thank you. I will.
All right. Good to hear from you. Catherine, I'm coming.
Walk along the river, sweet lullaby. It just keep on flowing. And don't worry about where it's going. Oh, no.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. We're playing gardening. I'm making sure I get everybody's comments. So Tony has sent me a text with his tractor seat plant, and it does look like an old-fashioned tractor seat, does it not? But it's really cool. That doesn't really give you a sense of how beautiful this plant is. It is Forfugium japonicum var giganteum. The giant-leafed leopard plant, I guess we could call it. Though this plant won't be obvious as to why we call it leopard plant, but it's a beautiful plant. Leopard plant's a real traditional plant, even though it's from Asia. It's a traditional plant, kind of as traditional as azaleas here. Actually, it probably was introduced here even before most of our azaleas were. And it does well in gardens. It's beautiful, and it's a member of the aster family. It doesn't look like it, but it is a member of the sunflower aster family. And like as Dan has discovered compound flowers. I see that, Dan. Dan, compound flowers are really cool, and bees think compound flowers are really cool, and so do a lot of other pollinators. A compound flower is a sunflower is a compound flower. It's got lots of little flowers in one head. So a single sunflower is actually many little flowers all congested together. It's an inflorescence, all of it clustered together in one head. And so this is a member of the sunflower family. You can see that. It has many little flowers in the middle of it, Tony. And each one of those little flowers is going to produce something that we used to call an achene. And now we call them a cypsela or something like that. But it's a kind of seed. It looks like a puny sunflower seed. If you can imagine what a sunflower seed looks like, this is going to look like a puny sunflower seeds. And like a sunflower, there's going to be lots of them in that center. I can't tell you how many. And that also will depend on whether it gets cross-pollinated. If it doesn't get cross-pollinated and it needs it, then you're not going to see those seeds form. But if it forms seeds, they will be in the center just like a sunflower. Can't tell you whether that's going to happen, but there it is. Tony, I hope that helps. I know I've got some other questions I need to answer here, but Catherine, you've been waiting long enough.
Hey, Bill.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am good. Good to hear from you.
Well, I sent you a picture that I took this morning, just a shot
that.
Of our hydrangeas. We have quite a few in the yard, and they are very healthy. I don't know if you saw the picture, but the leaves are very
pretty.
Shiny and dark green.
Very
and,
pretty.
But there are virtually no blooms on them, and I don't know why that is.
So, they've been blooming in the past pretty well?
Yes, they have. They're not new. They're established hydrangeas.
Yeah, well established. So, so it's a tough one. So I mean, I'm going to go to the three things that come to mind. The first is that shade has gotten to the point where those are that they're really getting really shady, and they just don't have enough light to bloom. But that's one possibility. The second possibility is that there was that pruning was done in such a way that we removed some of the bloom potential from the plant. Was there any recent pruning done on the plant?
Well, not recent. I think I have done something that you suggested several times, that I've removed the old, like, gnarled old branches.
Right, which is great.
Down near the bottom.
Yep.
And I don't ever know whether I'm taking blooms off, but I did that last summer or last fall.
You'll be fine. So that shouldn't have affected it. That was a good pruning time. That'll be fine. But there were still plenty of stems, right? There were still plenty of stems left, and you didn't tip cut the other stems. You left the other stems alone, right?
Yes.
Yep. So that's, we're not going to believe that pruning's our issue here. The third thing that comes to mind is that doesn't seem likely here either. Sometimes there is winter damage that can be caused not by extreme cold temperatures, but by sudden transitions from warm temperatures to cold. And you'll usually get some bark splitting, or you may get some, it may damage the flowering buds. I don't remember a period this winter when I would think that would be the case. So my three excuses are not good unless, for some reason, we got some creeping shade issues here. Is it possible?
Well, it could be. They are not too far away from an oak, a live oak. I think it's a live oak, yeah. But they are not right under it, but close, pretty close by.
And it's pretty rapidly growing live oak?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yep. So I think what we're getting into is kind of a classic issue is that live oaks are really aggressive growers, and they cast young live oaks cast about as much shade as any tree I know, except for magnolias, and they do it faster than magnolias. And one of the things about live oaks is that they don't just capture the light right above, because the limbs are so low, and because we let those low limbs grow out, they capture all the light from the edges as well. So they can quickly grab every bit of sunlight. And I think that may be happening. One of the things you can do, because I know you're not going to cut the live oak.
And
Fairhope's going to make it really hard for you to do that. Is to try to trim out some of those lower branches so they're not capturing as much of the morning sun and the late afternoon sun. So maximize the availability of light. Watch your light. Maximize the amount of light that's getting there before 11 o'clock, and maximize the amount of light that's getting there after 4 o'clock.
Okay.
And I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see the blooms improve.
Okay, and before 11 and after 4 o'clock, okay.
Before 11 and after 4. And don't worry too much about what's happening between 11 and 4. The hydrangea can't use that light very well anyway, particularly in midsummer. But just the light before, any light that you can add to the plant before 11 o'clock, look for ways to trim the branches to do that.
Okay.
And you know, and it reminds me that my good friend Chris Francis is really good at sort of figuring out how to trim those trees so that you can maximize the sunlight. And tell him I said you want to maximize the morning sunlight. So but I think that's the issue.
Okay. Well, let me ask you one more thing. That sounds like probably what it is. We
we fed them with cottonseed meal, I think February, late March,
yep.
late February, early March. But I haven't put anything else on there. Would some additional fertilizer help?
No. And okay. it's always no. And I'm sure that your problem is not fertilizer.
Okay.
So it's always good to remember that fertilizer is not food, it's grease. Basically, the fertilizer is the grease that keeps the wheels turning. But it is not the food that the plant needs to grow. The food is sunlight. The food, what plants eat, if you will, is sunlight. They convert sunlight, into sugars. And without sunlight, it doesn't matter how much grease you add. They're not going to be able to manufacture the food they need. So you see where you are. And so there's nothing, no amount of grease we can add is going to make a difference now. What we need is the staff of life, which is sunlight.
Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do with that then. See if we can improve that.
All right, Catherine.
Okay.
Good to hear from
you
as always.
Appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Bye. Amy, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, I'm the one who sent you the picture of that invasive fern.
Oh, yeah. Good. Or not good.
I encouraged it because it was an improvement over the dead hydrangea and the Japanese climbing fern. But I don't think I want something that's invasive. And it's on the north end of the house that only gets sun for a couple months in the summer.
It's interesting, isn't it? So you kind of went from one invasive fern to another, and Japanese climbing fern is by far the more annoying of the two. It's awful. It's awful. I just love to say it with you. It's awful. This fern is somewhat less awful. And it is invasive. It is annoying. It will spread. You probably won't, under any circumstances, you'll see it come up in your yard and other places. But if you know, it's always a question of, what am I going to put here when I get rid of this thing?
Right.
And so we can talk, getting rid of it is, you could dig it up. It's not that hard to dig up. But then you got to say, gosh, I need something else here. And it needs to be something that suppresses it. So what we really need to find, the question that you've got there, if you decide you don't like that fern, and I think it kind of looks ratty after a while, and, you know, I've tried to live with it, but it just looks ratty. So if you didn't like that fern, you got to think, what else am I going to grow here? Is it possible for me to grow a shrub here? And so, given the location, one of the things I would say is you could grow a camellia there, but make sure it's 3 to 4 feet away from the house.
Right.
Don't plant it next to the house. Plant,
right.
Make, come out at least 4 feet from the house, and that camellia will grow. You may have to weed out the fern, but you'll have something really nice there. And it's going to shade out that fern. Even the fern won't be able to grow in the shade of a camellia. So
that would be great.
I might try that.
Is the light good for that north side light? Would be good for camellia?
Yes, ma'am. And I have to take this break, but I'm
okay.
going to come back and I will talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Is not an iris or a wild rose, but a little flower which I'll tell, known as Brave Coney Bell.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Hey, Dan, listen, those are tomato worm eggs. And let me be more specific. Those are tomato fruit worm eggs. And if you go to look them up, you could have a problem. Tomato fruit worm eggs, and yep, you know what to do. You know what to do. You fry them suckers. You don't even need bacon. You don't need grits. You just fry them. Listen, get rid of those eggs right away, Dan. There you go. You what you could do is, it's probably better just to pick the whole leaf off. Don't pick the tomato eggs off. So Dan found a bunch of little eggs, little white eggs, little things on his tomato leaf. And that tomato leaf was probably towards the top of the plant. That's where tomato fruit worms go, because they know that's where the young tomatoes are going to form. And just pick the whole leaf off. Boom. And then you can roll it up. You can smoke it. You can do whatever you want to with it. Put it under your black lights, Dan. See what happens. Take the whole leaf off with all them little eggs, and you'll avoid, think how many worms you've saved yourself if you find the eggs. Isn't that cool? That's really cool. Rudbeckia, Dan, a little late. I don't think I feel comfortable telling you you could plant the Rudbeckia now. I would start that in fall, or I would start it in spring. Yeah, you might be able to get brown-eyed Susans, which I love, to do just fine this year. You'd have to find the seeds from them. But I would wait on those Rudbeckias until this fall, or do them in spring, just in general, because, and we won't go into that. So, a lot of questions here. So we were talking. First off, Amy, I wanted to make sure I had addressed all of Amy. Did Amy stay with us? So we lost Amy. Amy, listen, let me tell you, I hope you're still listening. Amy had some ferns, and they were on the northwest corner of her house. They were invasive ferns. She didn't, she's not comfortable with them. And I'm saying, we can get rid of the ferns, but let's find something else to put there. And if we find the right thing, we may be able to suppress those ferns. There are a lot of things we could try there. A lot of things would like that sort of filtered light and the protected light, less light, less of the on that north side of the house. They would adapt to that very well. Camellia japonicas, a lot of Camellia japonicas would do very well there. Just make sure, pull it out at least 4 feet from the house. The center of the trunk should be at least 4 feet from the house. If you can pull it out 5 feet, it's even better. And it's not going to seem weird. You think that's weird because everything has to be slammed. It doesn't have to be slammed up against the house. And once you do that, you're going to think, oh, this looks just fine. And it will be a lot easier to manage. It won't get hit by the drip line. And that'll be great, and they'll love that. They'll also get plenty of light if you pull them out 5 feet, because the sun's angle will be such that they're going to get plenty of light on that northwest corner, and they're going to be fine there. There are a lot of other plants, but I think a camellia is a really fine thing to do there. So look for a nice evergreen camellia to put there. I would say a cone-shaped camellia might be better for you in that area, so a japonica is what I'm thinking about. And there are a lot of great varieties out there, so think about that. I think that's the way to go about it. Now, Sharon, I asked Sharon to call because Sharon sent me a picture of something. Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I'm not the one that sent the pictures, but I'm the one that's going to talk to you about this.
Good. So let's talk about Nutsedge, and maybe it'll help the person who sent the pictures.
Talk on the radio.
Yeah, that's right. So I've listened. What's up, Sharon?
Okay, the farthest away picture is a distance, then there's an intermediate, and then there's a close-up. If you look at the close-up, there is a, I don't know if you'd call it a bloom or what, but there's a little stalk. It's kind of immature now, but it'll come up, and it'll have stickers at the top of it. And later on, I mean, they look green now, but they'll turn brown, and when you walk through the lawn, they'll stick on your socks and on your pants.
Oh, those kind of stickers. Yes, they do, indeed. So they can certainly do that. A lot of things have latch-ons like that. Well, I see what you're saying by stickers, and not something that gets in the bottom of your feet and hurts.
No.
So I see where you're coming from. Well, what you sent me a picture of is a nutsedge. There may be other things mixed in there. So, as always, the question I always have to say is, we can get rid of the nutsedge, and then you can have bare dirt, and then you'll have another weed there, or we can figure out what it is we want to grow there. So is this a place, is this nutsedge growing, you want grass to grow there, is that right?
Okay, my friend has a centipede lawn, and this nutsedge, now in that particular picture, you can see the little bloom, but she cuts it so short that it'll never send up that bloom. The reason she doesn't like it is it's much darker than her centipede, so it's a darker green. Now, how does she get rid of it without killing her centipede?
Well, the problem is she's killing her centipede. So let's go back. Sharon. Let me say this. We've got, and I gotta say it quick because God, I can't believe this hour is gone. One, she's mowing her centipede way too short, and centipede is a very sensitive grass. It's the hardest of all grasses to grow, but if she mows it short, she's going to kill the centipede. And the reason the nutsedge is taking off is because she's killing the centipede, and the centipede can't compete with the nutgrass. So I wish I could. I mean, she's going to have to raise her lawnmower height.
It's at 1.5 inches now.
And she needs to raise it in summer to about 2.5 inches to 3 inches.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Ah, so we got Charlie. What did you do, Charlie? You stole some time from me today. I know you must have. He sped the clock up. It was crazy. I can't believe we've run out of time. But there it is, folks. We're going to be back next week. Give us a call if we didn't get to your questions. Good to talk to you.
Let it break.